This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome to your second hour of the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio. And joining the program now are two very good friends of the program, NPR Illinois' State House correspondent Brian Mackey and WTTW Channel 11 correspondent Amanda Vinicky. And they're down in Springfield, Illinois for what I think we all hope is the wrap-up of the spring session of the Illinois General Assembly. Thank you both for joining me this morning.
Good to be on with you, Rick.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. And yes, I'm going to say everybody in this state is hopefully going to be on board with you on that one.
You know, we finished by our May 33rd deadline, no problem.
Yeah, actually, see, you stole my thunder. I was going to say, you know, instead of happy June to everybody, it's like welcome to May 33rd. And I don't know about you guys, but I thought... quite frankly, and even wrote this, that I thought the fact that they didn't get finished on time, it's a Democratic General Assembly, it's a Democratic governor, it's a Democratic governor's agenda, not necessarily whether he would have gotten everything that he wanted or not, but nevertheless, for the fact that it's one-party control and they couldn't finish on time. I thought it was an embarrassment.
You know, I certainly see that perspective. On the other hand, when you step back and think about what they have gotten done, I mean, I've been covering state government for most of the last 15 years now.
14, it's gotten to the point where years. You don't quite like to say it out loud. At least that's where I am. I sort of...
There are people around with longer experience, but in my time, which goes back to the Blagojevich era, I cannot remember a year when they got, you know, there were... 5, 6, depending on how you want to look at it, major things that they got done this year. And I guess if it, you know, if you had to ask the professor for an extension towards the end of the semester to get them done, it's still a very long list of accomplishments, the likes of which I have not seen from state government during my time here.
You know, Rick, I wonder, I think there is, I'm a journalist, so I'm going to take the cop out here and say, I see both sides. That is that it, I think to a degree, perhaps was it an embarrassment intentionally? Was it something that was meant to say, hey, you know what? Big shot governor came in, wanting to get everything done, bragging about getting this all cleared away right on time, budget right away. It's a bit harder than that. You're going to have to negotiate. You're going to have to do some things. Was it merely what needed to be done? Because as you noted, there is Democratic control in the governor's office, super majorities plus in both the House and the Senate. So they could have done it alone, but what ended up passing in the House anyway, and we'll see presumably the same will occur in the Illinois Senate later this afternoon, was done in a bipartisan fashion. Yeah. So was that what was, for whatever reason, necessary in order to get it to that point, you know, push past the deadline in order to bring Republicans on board? Certainly they could have come to the deal that they eventually did earlier, ostensibly, but whatever reason, is that some sort of, you know, we talk a lot about everybody who's voting, they're people. And some of it is just perhaps deadline pressure, procrastination. Oh gosh, I don't want to land my entire summer in Springfield. These legislators who've been doing that for the past couple of years are ready to spend some time back home. So, I think it would have been an embarrassment had it carried on, a true big embarrassment had it carried on throughout the week. But considering that things do appear to have truly wrapped up, I don't think that's a narrative that will stick with Pritzker all that long.
Well, one of the things that the Senate will be voting on will be, and I want to focus first on the capital program, the $45 billion capital program. Now, that has gone to the governor. And Illinois hasn't had a capital program since Governor Quinn launched one, but this is, you know, $45 billion. One of the things that is on the Senate's agenda today is having to vote for what the House has already done, which is the assortment of taxes and other revenue sources to fund this infrastructure repair bill, which is not only just roads and bridges and things that we've talked about before on this program, but also includes universities, schools, state facilities, state fairgrounds, things like that. It's quite a menu of taxes and fee increases.
Something for everyone. That's part of how they were able to pass it in terms of the spending portion. And then, obviously, yes, as you noted, you've got to pay for it. And, whoo, it is quite the menu. It's not just taxes and fees, although if you smoke cigarettes, you're going to be paying more. If you drive a car, period, you will be paying more. That may be very evident to folks as they fill up at the gas pump, because you'll see a doubling in the gasoline tax. Don't know if you actually are aware what goes to.
Yeah, that's the thing. I noticed I drive past the same gas station every day, as most people probably do. And I remember seeing the price earlier this week here in Springfield. It was $2.67. I think yesterday night it was $2.88. And that was just in the course of a week. The taxes did not change during that time. I think it's not unusual for the gas price to swing that much. I wonder how much people will really notice that. On a day-by-day basis. If you don't smoke, you're not going to notice that fee. I think that
that's a dollar pack increase, right, on the current $1.98 state tax.
Right.
But to mention local taxes.
In Chicago can be considerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think there was a deliberate effort made to sort of make these less visible taxes. And some of the more apparent ones that might sort of surprise people, like I think the streaming internet tax, last I heard, was out.
That is gone.
Yes.
So
not going to be
that
a tax.
That would have really fired people
Netflix
up, I think.
Netflix and Pandora and things like that.
Plastic bag tax
the
was done away with.
The plastic bag tax was tossed, if you will. But that's something where people would really feel it, sort of like the soda pop tax a few years ago in Cook County there. And I think there's a real, you know, that experience is still seared in people's minds down here.
But, and then, of course, Rick, I mean, I know you're going to get to this, but also paying for a lot of that infrastructure, massive, massive, massive gambling expansion. I mean, I had characterized in my time covering state politics, which is about roughly the same as Brian's here, that adding 5 new casinos was going to be massive gambling expansion. This does that plus, plus, plus. You're talking 6 new casinos, additional video gaming terminals at all of those various establishments where they've popped up, turning horse race tracks into racinos, adding another horse racetrack back.
Now, don't move too far ahead, because I still want to talk about the infrastructure here, okay?
But certainly
new gaming revenues are part of the support structure for funding this. But, you know, an issue here in Chicago is now we'll have a state tax on parking at a parking garage or a parking lot of 6%, 9% for monthly users, 6% for daily users. We'll also have a tax on basically that's kind of a follow-up of a U.S. Supreme Court decision about the state sales tax going on the purchase of goods that you acquire through the internet. So, I mean, as you said, Amanda, there's something for everyone here, and we'll start moving into the discussion on gambling here shortly, but we're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with NPR Illinois Statehouse correspondent Brian Mackey and WTTW Channel 11 correspondent Amanda Vinicky, both in Springfield. I'm Rick Pearson here in Chicago. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio in downtown Chicago. And joining me in Springfield are NPR Illinois Statehouse correspondent Brian Mackey and WTTW Channel 11 correspondent Amanda Vinicky. We're talking about the not quite finished spring session of the General Assembly. The Illinois Senate due back in at 3:00 to hopefully wrap things up for and have them off off to the summer back in their districts. We're talking about funding for the massive $45 billion public works program that has gone to the governor. We're talking about the program. We've talked about the funding for that. And one, as Amanda started talking about, one of the major funding components for this is a massive expansion of gambling in the state. I mean, including the potential of a Chicago casino, which would be authorized, the slot machines at O'Hare and Midway, sports gambling, which also would include gambling kiosks at your favorite major league ballpark or hockey stadium or basketball stadium like United Center, or football stadium like Soldier Field. I'm not sure that anyone really thought that a gambling package could ever get put together in this state.
No way.
Well, I mean, we've seen, Amanda and I have not seen one in our time, aside from the video gambling establishment, which, I mean, let's pause here to reflect. That video gambling has changed the face of Illinois. At least here, Springfield has one of the largest per capita number of video gambling terminals, but they are in just about every bar, restaurant. There's fill strip malls. Even there are gas stations that have put in
Lucy's, Dottie's, Julie's.
Yeah, they all have these sort of like greatest generation women's names on them. But, I mean, that's really changed the face of Illinois. And now, like you said, you're going to land a plane at O'Hare Airport. You're going to go to downtown Chicago, and, well, somewhere in Chicago, maybe at the south side, there will be a massive casino complex. Like you said, gambling at sports stadiums. This is, you know, we haven't even gotten to another legalized thing. I'm sure we'll talk about that later in the program. But, you know, this session, now, and it's not, you know, some of this stuff was not a unanimous change, but it's really going to change significantly the face of Illinois.
Well, certainly, you know, and through the years, the city of Chicago has been up and down on whether it wanted a casino or not. And I mean, you know, I remember when there was the talk of the prospect of almost a Disney-esque type amusement park / Chicago casino. And various representatives of the ownership of casinos from Las Vegas were testifying down in Springfield. And that goes back a couple of decades ago.
Well, and this will not be, let's be clear, a city-owned casino, something else that had been tossed around. Will the Chicago own it or not? This will be a private operator. So remains to be seen who's going to actually be the one that will begin this mega complex, which will have more gaming positions than any other casino in the state. So as Brian talked about, I mean, this is a huge change for the face of Illinois, and one that, as you noted there, Rick, I mean, it has been talked about for a long time in Illinois, but nobody really ever thought was going to happen, just because it would always sort of fall apart at the last minute.
The bills would land on the Governor Quinn's desk,
yes,
and get vetoed, even after, you know, people had agonized and worked overnight for weeks and come to a deal and just got killed.
And this time it happened pretty darn fast. I mean, there had been talk about sports betting throughout the entire session, but the addition of a Chicago casino and the five others, including in the south suburbs in Waukegan, was something that was sort of last minute. I mean, those are ideas that have been kicked around again for some time, but that final package came together in short order, and a lot of people, you know, folks that are in on these discussions are betting people and were betting against it. They said no way, particularly given that this is something that newly elected Mayor Lori Lightfoot did want. For most of his term, Rahm Emanuel had wanted one too. And they're like, no way does Lori Lightfoot get one of these in her lap right away to help with the city budget when Rahm Emanuel couldn't get it his whole time. I mean,
and this is more than Governor Pritzker asked for. If we remember during his budget address, he made a point to say, you know, let's do sports betting. Let's not worry about all that other gambling stuff. These Christmas tree gambling bill approaches, they always
collapse
under their
own weight. Taking the advice that it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, you know, this is sort of like you ask for a bike for Christmas and you end up with a Mustang.
Well, just a few days ago, I was speaking to one lobbyist with interest in the gaming issue, which I think may actually be virtually every lobbyist in Springfield. But one of them told me they had no hopes that a gaming bill would pass. And in fact, this lobbyist told me, you know, I'm tired of watching Lucy put the football down and all of us go running at it and she takes it right away. I'm not going to even get into that. And sure enough, it does happen. But a very important point to be made is that all of that gambling was such a crucial component to paying for the infrastructure bill that I think was finally what cleared a major hurdle there. Certainly there was infighting going on between the idea of, yes, we should just do sports betting on its own, not get involved in the casino wars or those kinds of things. And in fact, it was looked upon at one time that perhaps sports betting would be a way to finally leverage casino expansion in a way, or at least calm some of the turf wars that exist in gaming as long as everybody got a piece. Now, I think truly the fact is having that money go to various projects and legislative districts, if you're not going to vote for gambling, then that part of the bill fails and you're not going to have anything to write home about.
Mm-hmm. And as you noted, everybody did get a piece, was a part of it, although there are certainly some of the existing casinos that have long warned and continue to warn here about, quote, cannibalization, that people aren't going to go to their facilities if all of a sudden you can game everywhere. And we've already seen that with these video gaming establishments in every American Legion Hall restaurant, bar, and private place. How popular are these really going to be? That is obviously an open question. I'm not really a better. I don't have money to bet. But these could be sort of Disney-like complexes, more than just casinos, trying to be the one that is slated for Southern Illinois is supposed to be, its own tourism draw built into a wider establishment than that. We can expect probably something akin to that in Chicago as well. But existing casinos also, they did get, sports books and additional gaming facilities. The racetracks finally got what they wanted in terms of slot machines. So everybody sort of won in this huge equation, and that was what helped to bring it over the line also.
And they get to move off the water, right? Remember, we were so, had to get out our fainting couches at the idea that people could gamble on land in Illinois, and the riverboats used to have to take cruises. There were limited times to come on and off, and now the casinos can just sort of scuttle the boats or sell them for scrap or whatever and move on to the land if they want. But I think Amanda's point about this question about market saturation is a good one. I think that I've heard people talking sort of in whispered tones about a bubble in the video gambling thing, that maybe that industry needs to shake out. There's been some consolidation maybe ahead. And I think there is a question about whether this can really be the cash cow. This is an easy thing because it's not one of those evil tax increases we were talking about earlier, evil from the lawmaker's perspective. But
it's a user fee. You don't have to gamble. Nobody's forcing you to, like you need to drive your car.
It's a sin tax.
But my favorite statistic about this came from the sort of nonpartisan budget forecasting arm of the state legislature. They do a report on, it's called Wagering in Illinois every year, and they looked at the number of positions, which are, the seats around a blackjack table or slot machines in existing casinos, compared to the number of video gambling terminals across the state. There are, 10 casinos in Illinois now? And the equivalent number of video gambling terminals would be an additional 24 casinos. That's already before this legislation that, we should also add that still hasn't gotten through the Senate, although there is seemingly a deal, before this bill passed. So you have 10 real casinos, 24 sort of virtual casinos, and now we're adding on 6 more, plus the existing casinos get to expand their number of positions.
Plus the racinos.
Yeah, racetracks.
Racinos, yes, I think you're going to, most people have probably never heard that term before, and you're going to hear that term a lot now that we're going to have gaming at the racetracks.
Although it comes too late for some, like Balmoral Park, which is near where I grew up in the south suburbs. I mean, the horse racing industry has really
Maywood Park is being demolished as we speak. So
last time I went by Balmoral, the parking lot was being used to store cars, basically. I don't know if it was for a rental car company or what it was. The fence was kind of blocked out, but it was just the surface was just covered with cars.
We're speaking with NPR Illinois State House correspondent Brian Mackey, WTTW Channel 11 correspondent Amanda Vinicky, about what we hope will be the soon to wrap up spring session of the Illinois General Assembly. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. Joining me on the phone, joining me by the magic of the internet is Amanda Vinicky, WTTW Channel 11 correspondent, and NPR Illinois State House correspondent Brian Mackey. They're down in Springfield as we prepare to see the legislature wrap up its spring session with the Illinois Senate coming in at 3 o'clock today. We've been going through a lot of items that they did. We still have plenty to cover in the remaining moments. But first, we have a call from Mr. Steve Brown, the spokesman for Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Mr. Brown, welcome to the program.
Mr. Pearson, thank you for having me on. I told your producer I would take Ron's place today.
Okay.
I was admonished to be brief. I hoped you folks would all be like in the press room, and we could have just done it in the studio kind of thing. But the speaker said it was a historic. I think Leader Durkin agreed. There are a range of things that we'll be covering over the days ahead. There was a big package of reforms on Medicaid managed care. There was a big package on improvements to the laws that will curb sexual harassment and discrimination. The gaming thing was the culmination of, what, about 20-plus years of inactivity.
Exactly. And someone actually reminded me about another issue which ultimately didn't come to fruition, which was the expansion of the restaurant taxing district for McCormick Place. And someone on Twitter said, oh, here's the story Rick Pearson wrote about it when it began 30 years ago. And I had to correct them that it was the wrong story. It was another story that I wrote 28 years ago.
There you go.
So that says, well, Mr. Brown, all good points. Thank you very much trust me, there will be a lot being digested through this through the General Assembly session in the coming days and weeks ahead.
I was going to say what ultimately brought about this deal is something else we haven't touched on, and that was the flurry of last-minute meetings, including, of course, with your boss, the Speaker Michael Madigan, and what got House Republicans, who'd been very initially recalcitrant versus the other caucuses on board, was adding in some of a wish list that business had been demanding for quite some time, and talking with business folks, they were remarking that, wow, and I think this is, to your point, what the House Speaker had mentioned in his closing remarks, efforts that had been tried for over the years, gambling, but also under Governor Bruce Rauner's administration, businesses got more of what they had wanted in one fell swoop right there, which is where you did see some GOP support than they had in the entirety of the 4 years under a Republican gubernatorial administration.
When you took the list and whittled it down a little bit, it was designed to help and add, not the Rauner approach to destroy and hurt working families. So that, I think, was a key difference. And it was,
I've never heard that term before.
Yeah, I understand.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Brown. I appreciate it.
Bye, Brian.
Bye, Steve. And we heard a train there. That's another thing in the Capitol project, supposedly, is relocating those 3rd Street tracks, which just happened to go by pretty close to where Speaker Madigan stays when he's in Springfield. I happen to live in that same area when I first moved here, and I think that will be a welcome change for downtown.
That'll be, yes, that'll actually be a reform for change the whole kind of network down in Springfield of with as part of the high speed rail construction. Let's switch over to another one of the governor's Think Big agenda items, one that he talked about throughout the campaign, and one that, again, there were a lot of doubts of whether it would come to fruition or not, and that would be the legalization of recreational adult use of marijuana. That, you know, you could almost write a book just on the progression of this legislation, particularly, you know, take it back 2 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, thinking, covering the when Illinois legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes and how difficult it was for legislators to pass that. I mean, it was pulling teeth. It was very difficult. It was intentionally set up to be a very, very strict program, most restrictive, in fact, in the nation. And then actually another measure that after all of these major efforts in terms of the budget, gambling and such were passed, the House also took up a measure that will make permanent and essentially expand that medical marijuana program. And it passed overwhelmingly. I think six representatives voted against it.
The medical.
So just the medical part. Yeah. So just an incredible departure. It was not, of course, that easy for full-scale legalization of marijuana, but that program is one, again, that did so much more. Yes, people will be able to smoke weed, toke, whatever you want to use.
Not
I've learned
in,
a lot
not,
of those terms
not in public, not in public places.
Not in public places.
Right.
But starting January 1st, in the privacy of your own home, or if you are in, say, a hotel room that allows it. I was actually in Denver, and evidently they have set aside hotel rooms. It's kind of going back where all hotels had been smoke-free. Now there are certain rooms where you can rent it and even choose to purchase whatever sort of devices. I don't know. This is
or an authorized hookah parlor.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's also part of this. But
we should also talk.
That's what I'm saying. It's huge. It's more than just marijuana. There's a component, a reparations component.
Well, and that's what we should talk about, is that the people who sponsored this in Illinois, and in order to win the full support of the entire Democratic caucus, including the Black caucus, this was a very important component. They said they wanted to have this not just be about a commercial market and sort of legalization, but to sort of stretch backwards in time and look at the harm that the war on drug has done, particularly in communities of predominantly people of color. And so that's something where even the deal that was finally reached, and there were compromises made with law enforcement, and that's one of the cons. Law enforcement has concerns. Apparently right now there is no sort of legal court-accepted test for marijuana impairment. You can test someone, but it's not clear whether they...
It's not a breathalyzer type.
Yeah, you don't know if they consumed it a day ago, an hour ago, or a week ago, necessarily. And there were also concerns from the business community about whether employers would be able to have strict, you know, sort of drug-free standards that they could maintain. And so there was a real attempt to meet all those concerns. There were still some members of the Black Caucus who were very unhappy with the end result, although some of them sort of gritted their teeth and voted for it anyway. But this is something the supporters or the backers of this plan say they really wanted it to not just be about the commercial market, but about sort of redressing these past harms.
And, you know, there was the belief, too, and there was a lengthy caucus of the members of the Black caucus in the House, a lengthy caucus over this legislation. And yes, there were concerns that this did not, particularly the expungement issue, was not kind of a blanket expungement as I think many were seeking, and it's more a process that it has. The governor basically is going to have to go through things and the state police on a case-by-case basis for pardons and expungement.
Which one presumes will run to thousands and thousands and thousands of applications.
Yes. But there was also the belief, too, that if you put this bill on the board and it has, you know, an expungement-type provision, it would be very difficult for members of the African American community to vote against that bill.
Yeah, that's true. And they also wanted what the backers call equity in the market opportunities, right? So the typical way you see, there's a lot of rent, you know, what economists call rent-seeking entities in Illinois, right? They come in and try and insert themselves between the government and the people and skim off the top of that. And you had all these businesses that have invested a lot of money, a lot of people with connections to the political leaders in this state who have invested in the medical marijuana industry, and it would be pretty easy for them to flip a switch and just start selling. And so there was an attempt to sort of say, well, let's, how can we involve communities that have been most affected by past, you know, tough on drug policies and make sure that they are getting a piece of the economic benefits
of this. Right, because there had basically been frustration that with the medical industry, which again was very restrictive, that those businesses that were able to grow and sell cannabis were given a license to print money by virtue of the Illinois government when they won the opportunity to do so in a competitive process. But you had to be a very wealthy individual to really get in on the front of that. And now this measure actually awards sort of points in the system that decides who will receive one of these licenses from the state to get in the business. Now, if you did have a drug conviction in your past or are a relative of someone who did, that helps you versus hurts you. It's a complete reversal of really, I mean, decades of practice in the, quote, war on drugs, which Illinois politicians pointedly say they are trying to reverse.
We'll continue our discussion on the Illinois General Assembly's spring session wrap-up today with Amanda Vinicky, WTTW Channel 11 correspondent, and Brian Mackey, NPR Illinois State House correspondent. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pierce from the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Down in Springfield, Amanda Vinicky from WTTW Channel 11, Brian Mackey from NPR Illinois, the State House correspondent there. Just a couple of texts, and I think folks aren't quite understanding, how can you and your guests be so proud about what this legislature has done involving taxes and new laws? Folks, we're just talking about what they did. No one's endorsing any of these things in this panel. We're telling you what's going on, what's happening. So do you think we like taxes any more than anybody else? We're just telling you how it works and how it's going to affect you. Okay?
We're both right, rushing to jump in here. Rick, I want to say that while these are seen as successes for J.B. Pritzker, and you're going to hear talk about that. You heard Steve Brown, the Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan spokesperson, call in and talk about that. When we speak about this changing the face of Illinois, there may well be people in a couple of years cursing him for all of these changes. They may not like it, not even just the taxes, but again, we'll
pot
see.
Pot shops
everywhere, the casinos.
Expansion of abortion rights in Illinois.
Exactly. Yeah. There is certainly frustration still, particularly downstate, about something else that Pritzker sees as a huge accomplishment. It came near the start of the year and the raising statewide of the minimum wage, but I think small business owners are certainly frustrated about that and will continue to be so when it hits. He sees these as successes. This is his vision, and Illinois voters elected him overwhelmingly, and also, again, Democratic super majorities to both chambers of the General Assembly that helped him to get this agenda, and it is a huge agenda, more accomplished this year than we've seen in years past. So from that standpoint, yes, a success, eye of the beholder there.
Yeah, but although there are these Democratic supermajorities, they use them, they didn't have to, they just needed a bare majority, but these were bipartisan votes on cannabis, less so, but that was still bipartisan.
Not on the minimum wage.
They were Republicans, not on the abortion or reproductive health legislation, as the Democrats call it.
And barely on marijuana,
but there were definitely some sort of libertarian Republicans, more libertarian-minded Republicans who supported it. But on the taxes, on the capital construction, those were significant bipartisan majorities. This is sort of from our perspective, if you have a problem with this, talk to your legislators. But these were relatively broad majorities for tax increases. I was trying to think, the first tax bill that they ran yesterday, you sit there in the press box and you're kind of below this big screen that has the names of all the legislators in orange, and then a little red and green dot appears next to their name. And I cannot remember a tax increase bill that got so many green dots from both sides of the aisle. So, sure, voters may be unhappy with this, and they can express their opinions on that in next year's primary and general elections, but this was bipartisan.
So, again, and you know, I sometimes really enjoy the text line. So you just, Brian, were talking about, yes, there was bipartisan support for this, and someone promptly texts, because Madigan twisted arms. No. Actually, well, you had, you know, House Republican Leader Jim Durkin was voting on these various issues as well. And
I think Madigan had probably to do one of the least amount of arm twisting.
Right. Well, right. And I think that raises another valid point, is that I think not only was there, quote, a perceived mandate from Pritzker and the governor's office with his election over Bruce Rauner.
Victory, yeah.
But also the fact that after 4 years of a largely dysfunctional state government in an ideological warfare between a Republican governor and a Democratic legislature, that there was, in a way, kind of a pent-up atmosphere among legislators, including some Republicans, to actually pass stuff that they knew was going to become law.
Right. So many of these issues had been waiting during that ideological warfare. That is, I think, another reason why so much perhaps got done here. And in terms of Republicans, why they did sign on, when you speak with Republicans, because it is so outside the norm, they say there were several reasons, including, again, those business changes that we had talked about. Also, you saw an interesting maneuver out of Democrats. Again, most of the measures that we are talking about in terms of revenue and tax increases all go to pay for infrastructure upgrades. They aren't supporting the budget itself. That there's that managed care tax fee. Other than that, most of these measures, the parking, the gambling, the gas tax, all is going to pay for public works projects. And Democrats took out all of the projects that would have been slated for districts represented by Republican representatives from that program, basically saying, you're not going to help us to pass the spending for it. We're not going to pay for the projects in your areas. So that certainly was a message. And again, Democrats had the ability to pass all of this without Republican support. They didn't want to, because of course voters aren't going to be happy with increased taxes and increased fees, but voters also presumably wouldn't be happy and keen on sending their legislators back if everywhere else there are ribbon cuttings, nice buildings, roads without potholes, safe bridges, but not in their own districts. And that is how the political, quote, game is played. And I think that was one of the other things that brought about this flurry of meetings and actually a bipartisan deal.
You know, and one of the things we know from political science research, and I won't bore your listeners too much with this, but that there is this bias. People who are more sort of Democrat, liberal minded want government to do things. People who are more Republican, conservative minded don't. And so from that standpoint, you do have that fundamental divide. If government gets a lot done, some people are going to think that's good. Some people are going to think that's bad. But I also think that the type of people who go into government, with some exceptions, you know, the more Tea Party, no caucus types, but those people are a minority in Springfield. If you get elected, you want to have accomplishments. And so there is sort of a bias among lawmakers to cut deals and get things done. And that's why you saw this come to fruition. And, you know, you talked about pent-up demand from the last 4 years. I think there's pent-up demand since the Ryan administration in the early aughts. I mean, you had Blagojevich, who was dysfunctional relationship with the legislature. Governor Quinn did not have a great relationship with the legislature. His biggest accomplishment was reducing state employee pensions, and the Supreme Court struck that down, you know, accomplishment in quotes from his perspective. And, you know, now here we are, you know, Governor Rauner, we all know how that went. And so things are actually happening. I think in the building, this is viewed as, wow, this is a real turning point in government, but obviously not everyone is going to share joy in that.
That's Brian Mackey, Illinois State House correspondent for NPR Illinois. And we were also joined by Amanda Vinicky, Channel 11 correspondent, WTTW. Thank you both for joining me this morning. And we will probably be chatting with you this afternoon with the Illinois Senate. Thanks again.
Thank you, Rick.
Great to be on, Rick.